So here is maybe the single sickest thing about the terrorist attacks in Mumbai last week. A hospital seems to have been one of the pre-selected targets. A hospital. According to press reports, two hand grenades were lobbed at a hospital, the Kama and Alblas Hospital. The Times of India reports that doctors in the maternity ward at Kama and Alblas locked the labor room's huge doors before performing a cesarean section. At one point, they delivered a baby even as the terrorists pounded on the glass doors and roofs. The doors were not open till the police came in the morning, said a doctor. The Times of India also tells the story of Jameera Banu. Ms. Banu had undergone a cesarean and returned to the maternity ward around 7 p.m. 2 hours later, when she heard firing on the hospital campus, the new mother, bleeding in pain, hid herself in a dingy room in the hospital along with several other patients. 6 nightmarish hours later, commandos stormed the hospital and declared it safe. 3:30 a.m., uncertain about their safety, most of the women got themselves discharged on Thursday morning when they heard the terrorists were still at large in 2 of the city's prominent hotels. Most of the 33 patients, including 16 babies, left for their homes despite doctors advising the mothers against it. Why did they attack a hospital? But if that was perhaps the single sickest thing, here is one of the most beautiful. Here is a clip from Saturday's All Things Considered of a hero in Mumbai last week, Khalid Manu, a Muslim resident of the city who rescued several people, mostly Hindus, at great personal risk to himself. Why?
I want people in the world to know it is also Muslims dying, number one. Number two, it is Muslims like me also risking our lives to do whatever to save their fellow human being there. I want to be an example for people who put down Islam, saying, no, there is all Muslims are terrorists. No, all Muslims are not terrorists. Terrorism has no religion, no race. They don't care. Their main objective is to put fear in our hearts, scare us. They just want to do that.
And with that, good morning, everyone. Hope your Thanksgiving weekend was as good as it could be with this going on in what is practically a sister city to New York. New York and Mumbai, New York and Bombay, as many still prefer to call it, have so much in common. We are both international cities, cities of art and commerce, cities of openness and modernity. So we will talk a lot about the Mumbai attacks this morning and some other things as well. Remember, we will have live coverage of President-elect Obama introducing his foreign policy and national security team, including Hillary Clinton and Robert Gates and others. That is scheduled for a half hour from right now. And we've got a question for this morning on our webpage. What foreign policy change would you like to see the Obama team bring? What foreign policy change would you like to see them bring? Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. We've been hearing the political analysis this morning and really all weekend of what happens next in India and Pakistan. Let's talk about what happens in the South Asian communities in the United States, including here in New York. Uma Mysore Raykar of Queens is president of the Hindu Temple Society of North America. She's also a practicing obstetrician-gynecologist here in New York. And Zeenat Rahman, the program coordinator for public advocacy at the Interfaith Youth Corps, is also with us. That's a national group based in Chicago. She has family in Calcutta, I'm told, and among many other things, she is co-creator of a play about Muslim women and their real-life experiences. So Uma and Zeenat, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on with us. Hello.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Uma, as an OBGYN, first of all, were you especially horrified about the attacks at the hospital and that scene in the maternity ward?
In fact, believe it or not, I trained in that hospital.
Really?
Yes. I got my medical education in Bombay, and soon after that I went in for my post-graduation in obstetrics and gynecology, and that was the hospital that I trained. And suddenly I was simply aghast when I heard a hospital was being hit. Poor innocent women and children are being hit. Very fortunately, as we instantly started to pray, none of those people were hurt and nobody had to sacrifice their life for it. But the fear is unimaginable. I'm very sure They were simply petrified, and I commend those physicians who were able to perform the C-section under the threat of what was going on just outside. It is impossible to describe the feelings in words.
I'm sure it is. And it's so hard to talk about this in general, because it's almost impossible to put into words many of the feelings and hard to come up with a policy response that seems fit to the occasion. How have you and the Hindu Temple Society of North America, of which you are president, been reacting here in New York this weekend?
Well, of course, it is still a tremendous sense of shock and dismay. And the first thing many of us did was to gather in the temple in different groups, somewhat of a support groups. And this, actually, we came to know this sometime on Wednesday. And as the days rolled, I started collecting people to say, let's have some kind of a prayer service, which was organized on Thursday. That was Thanksgiving Day. And Mayor Bloomberg was really kind enough to come here and say a few words and express his condolence. And this kind of prayer service, collectively gathering together, expressing each other's feelings and the shock, it helped somewhat. And some of us, I still have some family back in Bombay, although not really in that area, but still, no place is far. Anybody can be hit. And like me, there are many others who also have families in and around Bombay. And it was just giving each other a great sense of support. Now, at the same time, I think we all should realize that this kind of tragedies and terrorism attacks must not deter us under any circumstances. And I think we should move forward, get the city back to normal, and that's what we've been telling our people also.
Yes.
And get back to your normal activities. Let's not get worried and scared. Oh, my God, what's going to happen next?
And in a few minutes, we're going to play another clip from Mr. Manu, one of the heroes of the attacks who we heard from a minute ago, saying things really are incredibly getting back to normal in Bombay, which is a sign of the determination of the people of the city, much as things got back to normal in New York after 9/11. But Zeenat Rahman, same question. How is the Interfaith Youth Corps reacting to the Mumbai attacks? What are you doing?
Well, certainly over the weekend, we were all concerned about the safety of our loved ones. And I think that what this has made us realize ever more is how interconnected we are. So we actually have a colleague who's in India right now at an interfaith conference. And I had a friend who was flying to Mumbai that day and decided to go anyway. The question for the young people, the young leaders in our network, is how are they going to mobilize their interfaith alliances on their college campuses to stand in solidarity with people of different faiths, to really remember and respect what happened in Mumbai, but see it as, you know, as tragic as it is, see it as an opportunity for creating a unity, you know, between alliances, between faiths, and between ethnic lines.
I hear you using Facebook to help organize some kind of show of solidarity. How's that working?
One of our interfaith leaders has organized, she's part of a network that's organized about 100,000 people to wear white today in remembrance of the Mumbai bombings and all of those affected. I think what everybody's waiting for is really not the reaction of the government necessarily or the diplomatic response, but how is civil society going to respond? And I think ways like this are things that we hope to support.
How can solidarity grow? Since you are an interfaith organization, it sounds from that answer like you're really working on getting people in civil society to kind of stand together with people of other faiths, other backgrounds. But it's such a divisive moment, and we see how the politics are already starting to play out between Hindus and Muslims, between India and Pakistan at the political level, with a lot of fingers being pointed.
I would like to say that it is not between Hindus and Muslims. Yes, it's
right.
Between India and Pakistan, the government level. I think we must differentiate this. I don't think people have anything against each other. We must separate this politics from this. And we also know that in Pakistan, the civilian government, nobody can blame a government for what happens. But there may be certain militant groups, but that is for the investigators to come and decide. But I think this is the time for Hindus and Muslims to be together. I don't think Muslims would want to be hurt either. Neither do Hindus. I think it's essential for the Hindus and Muslims to be together, to have a common slogan that we would like to fight terrorism together. I think this is one thing that has to be brought to the forefront. In fact, we have planning a candlelight vigil with just about all the groups right here in New York, probably on Wednesday. And you know,
you want to tell us more about where and when, or do you know yet?
Yeah, I don't know yet. Probably in Queensborough Community College. We will know that sometime this afternoon, confirm it, and then we'll send out the press releases. And the Jewish Council has taken a tremendous initiative, and a lot of different organizations have taken initiative, and we hope to have it either Tuesday or Wednesday, but we will confirm that. So I think this is the feeling. I think people have to come together regardless of the faith. I think this is where the religions will come into play.
Yes.
This is extremely important.
But Zina, in Suketu Mehta's op-ed in the New York Times on Saturday, Suketu Mehta, author of Bombay Lost and Found, he wrote this: "In the Bombay I grew up in, your religion was a personal eccentricity, like a hairstyle.
Mm-hmm.
In my school, you were denominated by which cricketer or Bollywood star you worship, not which prophet. In today's Mumbai, things have changed. Hindu and Muslim demagogues want the mobs to come out again in the streets and slaughter one another in the name of God. They want India and Pakistan to go to war. They want Indian Muslims to be expelled. They want India to get out of Kashmir. They want mosques torn down. They want temples bombed." Do you agree that religious divisiveness is growing there and is one of the things that you have to fight?
I can give you a personal anecdote, which is, you know, watching the footage of this on Thanksgiving with my family, who, you know, my parents and my uncles all grew up in India, and, you know, one of their reactions was just confusion. You know, this is not the India that they grew up in, and I think that's still true of India today. You know, Bombay is a place where, as he goes on to say in that op-ed, you know, people, it's the place of hope. It's where people come, you know, hope beyond hope that they're going to make it. And I don't think that that's different. And I think that, you know, the terrorist attack was complicit. They absolutely knew that their hope was to stir up this tension, to play on these lines, you know, and drawing lines between people of different religions or different ethnicities, whether it's India and Pakistan or Muslim and Hindu. And I think what our job to do is to redraw the line. And tension and violence is not the inevitable consequence of these events. You know, that we would be playing into them if we did believe that.
And Uma, I know you have to go in a minute. Even the term South Asian, which is fairly recent, puts Indians and Pakistanis together in the context of their immigrant experience in the United States. Which is a stronger tie? The Indian and Pakistani tie, or the kind of unified or Hindu and Muslim tie for those who are of those religions, or the unified South Asian immigrant experience here in the New York context?
I think it should be Hindu and Muslim ties. South Asian is too broad, and India and Pakistan just represents the governments, and I think if you want to bring in the civilians, bring in the people, bring in the religious core, I think this is the terms. I think that's what should be done.
A last word, Zinat?
You know, I think that this underscores for me just the power of young people. I mean, one of the images that stood out most in my mind was the one of the lone terrorist at the train station, you know, who they allegedly is 20 or 21, but really looked 16. And you have to realize that, you know, a group of 10, 20-somethings did not plan this on their own, and they are being exploited by forces much larger than them. And in order for kind of us to push back, we really have to build a movement of young people who are working together in cooperation with one another, who can articulate the reality of what their world is, you know, with resources provided by organizations like ours, that really push back against that.
Zinat Rahman, Program Coordinator for Public Advocacy at the Interfaith Youth Corps, and Uma Mysorekar of Queens, President of the Hindu Temple Society of North America. Thank you both very much for coming on, Melissa.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Brian.
I'm sorry, under these circumstances. And now we're going to open up the phones for a few minutes for anyone from Mumbai or anyone with connections to Mumbai. Why did they attack Mumbai? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Call us and celebrate your city. Grieve for who and what was lost in your city. Tell us what you think will happen next in your city, if you consider Mumbai your city or one of your cities, and tell us why did they attack Mumbai. Here again, as your calls are coming in, Khalid Mahmood, a hero of the Mumbai massacres for helping save people in the midst of chaos and danger, he said this about his city on Saturday.
Look at it right now, today. It's only been 3 hours that the terrorists are dead and the public has all come out. It's already turned back into normal. Shops are open, taxis are running, buses are running, we are out, I'm here, everybody's here.
Everybody is out. Everybody is here, said Mr. Mahmood. Is that what you're hearing from Mumbai? He actually said that in contrast with New York and the United States, which he said locked down after 9/11 in a way that Mumbai is not now locked down. Do you agree with that assessment if you have ties to both cities? Call us now if you have connections to Mumbai. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Here's what we're doing this hour. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk to somebody from the Lubavitch community, the Jewish community, who the Lubavitch community in particular, was also a target of the Mumbai attacks. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll have live coverage of the Obama news conference introducing his foreign policy and national security team, including Hillary Clinton and others. And we have a question on our website, what foreign policy change would you like to see from the Obama team? Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show to answer that, and we will read on the air some of your questions as we go along here. But right now it is calls for a call out and call in from people with any connection to Mumbai. Mukul in Secaucus, thank you for calling.
Hi, Leonard. My name is Mukul, and I lived in Bombay for 5 years. Actually, I worked there. And probably we want to make sure that people do not have that much of hatred to kill anyone.
Why did they attack Mumbai?
Probably they just want to break the peace accord which India and Pakistan is having and, again, get back to the same hatred they already had.
Mukul, thank you very much. And Ashish in Freehold, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up in Bombay, and as it was called then, and it is one of the finest cities in the East in terms of the liberties that it offered. And I think Mumbai is going to bounce back. It always has. It's a very vitalized city. But there will be a little bit of fear because this time the terrorists actually took over people's way of life as compared to previous times, when there were bombs and stuff and people understood that this couldn't be controlled. But the fact that these people actually took over the city for the 60-odd hours that they did is going to be a little bit of something that's going to stay longer in the memory. As far as your other thing about why Mumbai was attacked,
yes,
I think Mumbai has been attacked for a variety of reasons. Of course, it's the commercial capital, and I think it's the same sort of impact that it would have like New York City when it was attacked. But more importantly, I think there is a strong pressure on these groups because of the Pakistan Army moving to the West and putting all their troops there and the U.S. Army attacking from Afghanistan. And I think, personally, the response, if Indian politicians were mature, would be to ask for permission to send Indian troops to Afghanistan to further show not only that they are in solidarity, but they are going to go after these terrorists no matter where they are.
Wow. Ashish, thank you very much. And Schumann in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In answer to your question about why did they attack, I think the last couple of callers kind of seemed to indicate the India-Pakistan thing and trying to create some kind of conflict there to draw the Pakistans out of that northwest province where the U.S. Army or the U.S. forces are also kind of trying to attack the Taliban. But I was really struck by the comment, the way you introduced it, of New York and Mumbai as sister cities. I really think that's true. They're both these kind of global teeming cities. And so you could say that the reasons why they attacked Mumbai are also a lot of the same ones maybe that Al-Qaeda attacked New York on 9/11.
Shuman, thank you. Mugda in Newark, you're on WNYC. Mugda, thank you for calling.
Hi, Brian. I love your show.
Thanks
for bringing up this topic. I think that, first of all, they wanted to gain a lot of worldwide attention, you know, by targeting the places in Bombay, in Mumbai, that are kind of, you know, never have been before. So, you know, that was one of the reasons. And secondly, because to play on the religious sensitivities of Indian people, to try to, you know, make them, put them against one another. That's one reason. And I think that people say that Bombay is back to normal and stuff like that. But I feel that it's not by choice, but people are resilient by force because they don't have an option. And I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons why we see people going back to their work and, you know, getting back to the normal way of life.
They don't have a choice. They have to live.
Yeah. They have to, yes.
Well, this phrase that some people are using, that this was Mumbai's 9/11.
Yeah.
Do you like that phrase?
I feel that it has happened earlier in Mumbai during the Bombay riots in 91. Then it's happened several times before in different contexts. In just a couple of years back, the subway systems in Mumbai were targeted, and you know that time it did not get as much attention that it got now. But I would say it's one of the incidents that can be compared to 9/11 in Mumbai as well as in the whole of India.
Thank you very much. Dushyant in Edison, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling. Good morning.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I really like your show. I hear you every day while going to work.
Thank you.
I'd like to say just a couple of points. I'm from Kashmir, and I have lived in India for 27 years before I moved to U.S. I was in Bombay for 5.5 years before I came to U.S. last year. You know, the interesting thing is terrorists don't care about people, whether they're Hindus or Muslims. I'm a Hindu, but the reason they attack Bombay is the same reason they attack New York. Bombay represents the spirit of togetherness. It is amazing if you go to Bombay how you will find cultures being preserved for almost hundreds of years. And I was listening to NPR, I think, yesterday or the day before when the person was saying the Jewish community in Bombay is almost 1,000 years old. Bombay is an ancient city. It's a new word, but people have been living and maintaining their cultures for hundreds of years, whether it is Hindus, Muslims, Jews, what have you. And the reason they choose to attack Bombay is exactly the same point. People, religions don't matter. People stay together, they maintain their culture, and it represents the spirit of togetherness, how people and communities can live together, not as in conflict, but gelling together and understanding each other's culture and enjoying that and leveraging that. And that is exactly the reason why they attacked Bombay, because they want to drive the wedge between people.
Much like New York, the way you describe it.
Yeah, so much like New York.
Dushyant, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you who just called to talk about Mumbai or Mumbai. And we're going to switch gears now for the next few minutes until the Obama press conference with Hillary Clinton and other members of his foreign policy team, which we'll carry live. Now a call in for anyone from the Lubavitcher Jewish community. Why did they attack Lubavitchers? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We've heard from Mumbai natives. We heard from Hindu and Muslim guests representing the people of their religion earlier, standing together. Now, Lubavitchers, it's your turn. Get a call and grieve Rabbi and Mrs. Holtzberg. Celebrate their 2-year-old, Moshe, who survived the attacks, was taken to safety by his nanny, reportedly found crying and soaked in blood by his parents' bloodied bodies. Call and say what you want. There were other Lubavitch victims as well at 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. We'll talk to a Lubavitch rabbi here in just a second. But, you know, I've been thinking, well, let's bring him on, and I'll share my thoughts with him as well as with you. He's Rabbi David Eliezeri. He's a Chabad Lubavitch rabbi in Orange County, California, and was a member, I understand, of the crisis response team to the Mumbai incident. Rabbi Eliezeri, can you hear me? It's Brian Lehrer in New York.
I can hear you clear as day, and I must tell you, Brian, every time I get off the plane in New York, which was last week, won't be again later this evening, the first thing I do is I change my news dial to listen to your show. So I'm one of your old faraway fans.
Well, that's very nice of you to
but
say.
Sadly, we're meeting in a tragic situation.
Under
now.
These circumstances, and I'm so, so sorry for the loss to you and your community. You were in Mumbai as part of a crisis response team?
No, I was not in Mumbai, but I think I think this is not just a loss to the Lubavitcher community. I think this is a loss to the Jewish community and to mankind also, to all of humanity. Because in addition to the Chabad emissaries, the Shluchim, Rabbi Rivka and Gabi Holzberg, who lost their lives, there was the terrible loss of Rabbi Benzion Hurman from Israel, Rabbi Leibish Teitelbaum from Brooklyn, and a woman called Nancy Rabinowitz, who was from Mexico on the verge of immigrating to Israel. So this is much. This is not a loss just to one small segment of a Jewish community, but it's really a loss to everybody who cares about humanity and decency and dignity and respect of human rights.
Well, I think that's fair to say, and I've been thinking how weird it is that Lubavitchers were the targets of this attack for a few reasons. For one, if it was really about Hindu oppression of Muslims and about Kashmir, what does killing Jews have to do with it? Anti-Semitism was such a sort of moral freebie, you know, from the point of view of the attackers, that it almost seems like they went after some Jews almost like an afterthought, although I guess it's part of the emerging for some people in you know, the small terrorist cell between the particular local grievances and what they see as their worldwide agenda attacking Americans and Westerners and Israel. But there's an ultimate irony here, too, because these attackers went after all the trappings of Western modernity in Mumbai. The hotels for business travelers, the bar for young backpackers, that hasn't gotten enough attention. The Leopold, which is a place where kind of alternative travelers go, young backpackers. The movie theaters were targets, the train station, the trappings of modernity that all fundamentalist religion rejects. But the Lubavitch are also, tell me if you mind me saying this, to some degree against modernity.
I don't agree with you in the slightest. In fact, we are the ones who engage modernity. And you may have read the eloquent piece written by Tim Rutten in the LA Times on Saturday.
I missed it,
where we are, where he describes so beautifully that Chabad is the religious group that wants to engage modernity but maintains religiosity. You may look at a guy with a black hat and a beard, you might think he's a little bit different than you, but the truth is we're no less engaged in the modern world and society around us, but at the same time we retain our convictions who we are as Jews. We don't believe about locking ourselves in a ghetto. We're the ones who travel to Mumbai or to many other communities and become an integral part of those communities all throughout the world and trying to bring the teachings and the values and the ideals of Judaism to the broader culture in through education, not through oppression in any way, and not through conversion, and not through forcing. So I think there's a fundamental difference here. The fundamentalism of intolerance, which has encountered the openness of kindness and compassion, which the Holzbergs emulated every moment of their lives.
And the Lubavitch are a tiny minority of Jews in the world. They're a small minority of the Jews of Mumbai. So why the Chabad Lubavitch Center?
First thing, Chabad or Lubavitch today is the largest Jewish organization in the world. There's nobody who has more centers and more communities. And Chabad's influence today is throughout the Jewish community. We operate a significant percentage of the synagogues in the United States, educational centers, with a majority of rabbis in many countries like South Africa and Australia and Italy, in Italy, and significant percentages in Russia with the majority of the Jewish community. So I think that you're portraying Chabad,
yes,
in an inaccurate kind of fashion.
So Chabad, you're saying it's the majority? It's certainly not the majority in the United States.
No, I said that it's the majority of rabbis. Synagogues in certain countries are led by Chabad rabbis. And in America, there's many, many Jews, hundreds of thousands of Jews, who may not wear a black hat and a beard, but their religious identification, the place they send their children to school, is their local Chabad center. Chabad is the way, yes, that they express their Jewish identity. And that's it pushes us into the Jewish mainstream. So we're far from a minority. We're a major player in the Jewish world today. And that's one of the reasons I think this took people so deeply, because everybody has a Chabad story of a Chabad rabbi who helped them out at some point in their lives. And everybody feels that this thing, they knew, they all met a Gabi Holzberg, they all met a rabbi in Rebbetzin like that who once helped them out with something. And this is why it's cut to the very core of so many people. This is not a distant thing from them. Everybody knows the local Chabad rabbi, and he looks at him, and he thinks of the guy in Mumbai, and he realizes there's a connection here.
Eliezer in Crown Heights, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I'm just curious why no one's looking at the fact that there was a great amount of incompetence in the way the military dealt with this, how long it took them to go in and when they did, and there are all the questions about who actually killed the hostages in the Chabad Center.
Who do you think may have done it? What's the controversy there?
Well, there's a question of whether the incompetence of the military was that when they went in, the way they went in, their whole procedure actually caused the death of the hostages.
Rabbi, have you been looking at that?
We were concerned at the time of how long it took them to wait to launch the assault, and it took them a very long time to do so. But again, and we do not know the time of death, the tragic loss of Rabbi Holzberg and his wife and the others that also were in the Chabad Center. So it's a question which deserves a certain amount of assessment. And I understand right now there's an extensive amount of public debate in India about the ineptness in many ways, at least that some in the Indian government are feeling and the Indian population,
yes,
about the response of the military. And they may need to revamp what they're doing and how they handle terrorist challenges.
And Baruch in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Baruch.
Hi, good morning. This is Rabbi Jacobson. I'm a Chabad Lubavitch rabbi together with my wife at Hunter College in New York City and Mount Sinai Hospital on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And I wanted to share a feeling, since you gave the opportunity to be able to grieve. I think it's good to be able to share it with others. That, you know, whenever there's a tragedy or any kind of attack, people often say it could have been me, no matter how unrelated they may be. Here, besides the fact that we too are Chabad Lubavitch rabbis and Rebbetzins, if you will, so there's an immediate connection. But the other connection is that they were so isolated. They were so in the middle of nowhere. While we are here in New York, are fortunate to be able to be within walking distance of many other communities, and especially Jewish communities or Lubavitch communities. But the feeling hit so deep. And I remember coming home that night and having to talk to our children and looking into the children's eyes and the sadness that they felt. It was like everyone whose unspoken words were, it not could have been us, it is us.
How old are you?
That's a very sad feeling.
Indeed. Baruch, thank you very much. And we may be less than a minute away from the...
Brian, I want to add
Obama,
one other point.
Rabbi, 1 second. We may be less than a minute away from the Obama news conference introducing his national security team, Hillary Clinton and others. We will go to that when it starts. And Rabbi, you and I were disagreeing a little bit about kind of the context of the Lubavitch movement within global Judaism, but I want to be very clear about the point that I was making, which was that Lubavitchers weren't the target of the attack, in my opinion. Jews were.
I agree with you a full 100%, and we are an important component of the Jewish world. But there's one other point that I want to add, Brian, and this is, we only have a moment. Number one is, the question is, how do we react to such a terrible tragedy? And the Lubavitcher Rebbe taught us that reaction to such a tragedy is by doing more good in the world, by bringing kindness and compassion to other people. We don't react with terror. We react with terror with kindness and goodness, because ultimately what they were trying to destroy was a compassion for another human being. So if a person today will think about the Holzbergs and the others who lost their lives in this terrible moment, members of the Jewish community, and also the Indians that lost their lives, and say, you know what, I'm going to dedicate a mitzvah. I'm going to light Shabbos candles. I'm going to give charity. I'm going to do an act of compassion for another human being. Mm-hmm. That is the greatest statement in battle against terror. And I also want to add that on our website, Chabad.org, we have an opportunity to read more about this and to participate in an online memorial to the Holzberg family, Chabad.org.
And I think the very fact that Lubavitch show their Judaism by their appearance made them more obviously Jews and therefore more open to attack. They look like someone's stereotypical idea of Jews, and I think that helped the Chabad members there, unfortunately, become targets. So Rabbi David Eliezer, Chabad rabbi in Orange County, California, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, back in a minute with the Obama News Conference.